it started to be clear that like that entrepreneurial thing that was inside of me to have my name in lights, my business,
yeah,
win or lose, was more appealing, was better. You know, I didn't need a long contract and a salary that I knew could only go to a certain point at some point. I'm not built like that. So I wasn't going to do it if Kevin didn't really, really want to, because I was in the right situation. I didn't think there was a chance, but Kevin wanted to.
Yeah.
It was tough, but you know, the ability to go start something at that point, I was 38, 39, and we had a blank canvas. So we had our experiences and our relationships, and Kevin was one of the greatest athletes in the world. And I had some great relationships and connections and experience, but you know, I was really behind the scenes, and I wouldn't say I didn't underachieve to that point, but I hadn't, you know, it's not what you read always. It's not a clear extension up. I was building the bricks of my building. And when it clicked and it made sense.
That's how success happens. From Entrepreneur Magazine, my name is Robert Tuckman. I self-funded, built up, and eventually sold two businesses to major players in the sports and entertainment industry. And I am fascinated by other entrepreneurial minds and what drives high-achieving people. So on this podcast, we're going to learn what they've learned and what it takes to really succeed. Rich Kleiman formed a special bond with NBA superstar Kevin Durant way before anyone had ever heard of KD. It blossomed into a long, trusting relationship that eventually led to a business partnership. Together, they formed 35 Ventures, an umbrella company for their joint business interests across sports, tech, culture, and philanthropy. Rich and Kevin have been immensely successful with a diverse investment portfolio, the Kevin Durant Charity Foundation, and of course, projects such as ESPN's sports business show, The Boardroom. I had a chance to sit down with Rich to talk about his journey from leaving the corporate world to venturing out with his own business. He was brutally honest and shared his story and all the bumps and bruises he's faced along the way. I was really excited to talk to Rich, as I've worked in the sports business for a really long time. I'd always admired from afar what Rich built with 35 Ventures, but I wanted to know how someone who really started his career in music ended up being so successful in the sports world.
Well, I really started my career like in the place that I could start my career.
Yeah.
I definitely didn't have the work ethic that I have now when I was younger. I had big dreams and I had some of the skills, looking back on it now, that I think that are kind of my calling card. I think I had them early. That was what I did well. I could speak in rooms. I could network and connect. And I think I could visualize ideas. And I loved it. You know, like I'm sure you meet tons of people that either love the adrenaline and speed of business and work, or they want to move to the next conversation. I just loved all of that, you know, and at first I really wanted it to be around sports. I actually wanted, obviously, be an athlete. And then
we all did, right?
I realized I couldn't do that. I wanted to be in the gym however I could. One summer I thought about being coach. I mean, when I was really young, agent. Then went to college and I didn't do anything in college. And I left college after like a year. I really didn't finish one single class. It's so embarrassing now too, because I have an 11-year-old and 7-year-old that, you know, I'm working my ass off to send him to college and I'm like, blew the money that my dad got together to send me to school. And when I came home, I still had the same drive and dream, but I wanted to do it quickly. And I didn't understand how any of the steps played a part in getting to me where I ultimately wanted to be. And who knows that at 21 anyway, right?
But
so first I started wanting to be in the restaurant business because it seemed glamorous. It seemed like people regarded you when you stood at the front of the restaurant.
Sure.
And that was like a theme a bit. In a lot of my desires as a kid wasn't about money. I just wanted to be regarded for my work and regarded for like, oh, he's serious about his business. And because I looked up to those people, you know, as a kid, I looked up to people that were successful. I really did. And I was going to work on this show, The Life, on ESPN. I don't know if you remember it.
It sounds familiar. What was the theme or?
So now it's basically Instagram and reality TV, but at the time we were going to follow around athletes.
Right.
It was this company, Radical Media, and the guy, CEO of Radical Media, John Kamen, great eye for talent. And he let a bunch of my peers and I, like early 20s, just work in the back office. It was really cool.
Yeah.
It was one of the best environments ever. And a good friend of mine was pitching a show, you know, as part of his role sitting there. And it was to do this sports show on ESPN called The Life. And I was like, I'm in. Like, this is what I do. You know, like I remember I was ready to talk sports. And again, I was ready to be the executive producer. Like, I didn't know anything.
Right.
Sat in a meeting, realized quickly when like the suits came in that I was nobody really in the room, but I had a big voice and I was loud and I always tried to, you know, be in the middle of it all. And someone said, well, what are you doing about the music for the show? And I remember like someone at Radical said like, well, what's the budget? And they were like $250 for 32 episodes. So this whole half of the room is like thinking, how are these kids going to do 32 episodes for $250?
Right.
Now ESPN probably thought they could take it back in house. And I was like $250,000. Like, are you kidding me? So once I found out that whatever I didn't spend, I could keep, I started building a library of kind of unsigned music and unsigned artists and bands and producers. And it really became one of the calling cards for the show, The Life. And that kind of just sent me into the music business for the next 10, 12 years.
Yeah. So what was it that really came up where you finally understood, like, you can't rush it? You can't, like, what was there a certain instance?
No. Now, honestly, I can't think of one time until possibly in the last year, maybe, and really in the last 4 months where, you know, I think I've matured very slowly, which is an odd thing to say out loud, right? But in other ways, I think
I like the honesty.
Incredibly fast. Like, I was emotionally and in terms of like being able to express myself as a kid, I could do easily. But in terms of like understanding that there was rules and there was ways that you had to do things and there was work you had to put in and that you couldn't just like say you could do something. You had to do it. You had to do the work. I didn't all the way connect with that. And I think I was good. So if I did the work at 80%, 70%, I still felt like my work was good. But you just know now that people see those things. You know, people can spot that. So it wasn't until I hit a wall at one point. I was working in music. I was managing artists. Mark Ronson trusted me to manage him. And then I started managing a handful of DJs and producers and artists. And then I met Jay-Z and I was able to work on his documentary film, which was like, that was end game for me to just be in a room with him.
Right.
And then I went to work at Roc Nation and I was managing artists there. And everything that kind of made me entrepreneurial and everything that I thought made me like who I was or this path that I thought I was going on, like trying things and building things and only working on my own. As soon as I got to Roc Nation, what I should have done was been like, all right, this is what I worked for. And now I'm an employee at this great agency and I'm around these great people and I'm going to build my world here. But I kind of lost my mojo a bit because I didn't see that anymore. I didn't see like the end anymore. I didn't see the stage in which I wanted to get. I didn't understand how I was going to get there. Realizing now that like you said it, you set that in front of you, but like you may not always see the way you get there and that some of these steps may not make sense yet or connect back to like where you ultimately want to be. But not understanding the marathon that is all of this life, you know, business. I was young, but in the entertainment business or sports world, I felt old, you know? So it wasn't until in the last three, four years, you know, and really in the last year where I really stopped focusing on what other people are doing. I stopped focusing on when and how I'm going to get somewhere, try to live in the moment more, try to be appreciative of what we've done, but also know we have so far to go and be really self-aware. You know, I think self-awareness is important.
Yeah. How did that come about for you? Is that, you know, having children, people, different ways. And it's great because I love that you're honest about it and saying, look, this just happened recently, because people look to you and they're like, wow, this dude is like killing it. You know, it must be super like, but I love that. But how did that change happen?
Well, you know, I think prioritizing what was important first, understanding that trying to be the best version of myself and trying to make the best of my situation and trying to kind of maximize my skill set and appreciate the opportunity that Kevin had given me and that I'd been able to work for, as opposed to trying to figure out like who was doing more than me and who was at an event that I didn't get the right invite to, or I didn't feel like I was invited the right way. And people don't want to admit that, but that's crippling, you know? And like, it's not that I'm insecure, I'm not. And it's not that I'm lack confidence, but it's more that like, we're all human and sensitive. And you know, you have timelines in your mind of when things are supposed to happen. And when they don't, it can mess you up. And then social media and the access to seeing everyone around you can suck. But when I kind of just like could talk about that out loud and be like, acknowledge what people were thinking. And I know everyone's thinking in a room, like FOMO, like no one wants to admit it, we all have it. And as soon as I could like understand that and be like, all right, I can feel that way, but I'm also doing this and look at who I was a bit and like really double down on what was in front of me and not what I didn't have, things started to click a bit.
I love that, because what you're saying, I mean, just personally living that, and I think so many people do with the compare and despair, and, you know, you're looking, and when you do that, you're really never, it's just wasteless worry, and you're not focusing on yourself and what you need to do to be successful. But I like you said, I love it. You're out there and honest, because 99% of all people are feeling that. And that's great to hear from someone like yourself.
No, definitely. I mean, and by the way, I think that also being confident to know that, like, who I am is the kind of person to communicate that, you know, like, if you saw certain people that you knew, you know, I don't know, I'm going to give an example that may not be accurate, but like if Jimmy Iovine mm-hmm. was being interviewed, and I'm not comparing myself, it's sure. an idol of mine. But if he was like, yeah, you know, FOMO, you'd be like, damn, Jimmy.
right. You don't want to hear that.
Like
that.
But I realized like that's who I am, that I'm pretty comfortable articulating that. And I know that those emotional things are what actually were my hurdles, you know, those moments of not focusing as much on my home life, but walking around and thinking I was a family man and saying it, when really I was like, no, I got to really make sure that things are so solid there, because I think we all know what it feels like when you leave in your, especially in an unorthodox kind of a work world, like our businesses, where if at home feels any bit off, you just don't, you can't operate the same way, or at least I couldn't. So when I didn't realize how that was all playing a part in it, and how like that stability really led to such great things for me, but it wasn't conscious. It was just like, wait, I feel like this is one thing I'm not dealing with the way I should be, but I think I am, but it's not. And it started allowing me to have more balance, started allowing me to have more confidence, because I think a great family life at home gives you real confidence, because you know you have something.
100%. It's just the fact, and it's so hard, and yourself being an entrepreneur myself, it's so much is affected by home, and so many times I've gotten thrown off of having to focus on work, and myself too, you know, in the past, even just through COVID and in the past couple of years, realizing what success really is. And like, this show is called How Success Happens, right? For entrepreneurs. But it's so great to see, especially like what you're talking about, because I've felt this, that you don't measure success. Not a lot of people today, maybe years ago, but today you measure success in everything, in family, like those things are more important. Or millennials are great at it too, because it's like they're here for the experience. Work and dollars isn't everything, right?
Yeah,
it's what your life means, and lifestyle. And it seems like you've really learned that most recently.
Well, and also as I got older, right, I also realized that like some of the things that came with that sensibility, that little bit of worrying about everything else, is a younger trait.
Yeah.
And when I started getting older, you know, I'll give you an example. When I was talking to Jack Dorsey the other day, I tried to make a comparison between our two businesses. This man is the CEO of Twitter and Square, thousands and thousands of employees and billions of dollars. I have 20 people that work with me. I don't have billions and billions of dollars anywhere near it. And my instinct would always say, when like trying to relate, be like, well, you know, my business is not. And I realized people don't see that, you know, like that's not how. So for us, right, for the level of our success we have, let's say if I meet somebody that owns 3 restaurants on the Upper West Side, and they're clearing $1 million a year, and between the 3, and they have a house here, and they have a house in the country, I'd be talking to that guy, and I'd be like, that's incredible. Like, what's the margins on this? And I really see him as a successful, incredibly successful businessman. Imagine if that guy was like, oh, you know, my restaurants are nothing. You manage Kevin. I'd be like, stop talking like that. Like, you have your own business, man. And I started realizing that, like, yeah, I didn't create something that could generate billions of dollars. It doesn't work like that.
Right.
But Jack didn't see my success any different just because I didn't have billions of dollars.
Right. You only see it, what is so true. And I think it's when you can be so self-critical, like in your mind, thinking like, I'm not good enough. And it's so amazing, because that's just your own thought. And like you said it, while he's looking like, wow, this guy's partners with Kevin Durant, they created like stuff with ESPN, like so many different areas. And like, but in your head, you're always looking out the other way. And I think for me, I mean, I work on that specifically every day. And you have to value yourself to a certain point and understand that. And multiple people can achieve success, right? Someone else could be successful. You could be successful. But I do think, like, it's so funny you say that, because I think the majority of people, even at the level of Jack Dorsey or whoever might be, like, still have some of that as well. Like, I think everyone.
Does. That was so that's perfect that you say that, because that was the other realization, which is hope this doesn't sound too wild. I'll say it. My brother always laughs at me when I say this, but when I started to realize that other people were human beings, it became very powerful. I started thinking to myself, like, wait, he's not more confident. He can't go in that room any better than I could. My wife and I went to Google Camp twice, right? And we were really,
What is that?
Google Camp is in Sicily. And I was invited, I believe, year one, strictly because I was Kevin's partner, right? Mm-hmm. Which, like, I'll take it every day.
Sure.
And then the second year, I think I had built up a little bit of a business acumen, or it started to become more known. And Kevin was still invited. And I don't think I would have been invited without him, but I still got it, right? Year one, my wife and I went there, and I was at 80%, I think. I was great socially, at night. But when we were in the conferences or in the panels, I'd sit there, and if there was, like, the head of, head of Showtime,
right.
James Murdoch, then it would be Giselle, and then it would be governors, and I'd be like, oh, well, I can't talk about it.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I realized, like, nah, the people I look up to don't think that way. They're human beings. There's a void in what they've needed in their business world. And that's what I do. You know, like, I can connect and I can visualize. And I started seeing that and thinking that the second year, and was like, all these people are in this conference thinking the same thing as me. Like, when is the next meal? When's this over? Oh, my back hurts. Oh, I wonder if he knows I'm here. Oh, that was interesting. I wish I could do business with him. We're all thinking this.
Totally.
And
it's amazing because when you look at it and just think, like, everyone has personal issues, family, and, like, no matter who you are, whoever you are, no matter how much success you've achieved, at the end of the day, you just said it, like what you said to your brother, which is funny, but it's real. Like, everyone's a human being and everyone has those same feelings, emotions, which is when you realize that, and it sounds like for you, like, that just makes you unstoppable. I think just like it really gives you that confidence.
Yeah. Well, and I think that's why, not to get political, but I think that's one of the most shocking things that's happened to our society with Donald Trump is that, put aside everything else, we used to, like, vilify George Bush, you know what I mean? Like, Republican. And then you never, though, questioned whether they were presidential or humans or good people. And you just assumed and relied on that, right? Relied on another power. Someone will fix it. Someone's going to fix the virus. Someone will fix it. I remember in February, I was talking to someone, and I was early on it because I read a lot on, not books, but I read, like, the news a lot.
Yeah, sure.
And I remember saying to someone, like, yeah, but our medical innovation, I'm, like, making up words, like, we're too far along, our science, it's like, it was bullshit. That's just what we were told.
Yeah.
And the truth is that when somebody who actually, for once, was in a position of power in our country that actually, you know, I'm not saying he's not human, but it was like, oh, God, like, I cannot relate. Like, there's nothing relatable. And it was scary. And it all felt kind of like, well, none of this is making sense now. But now I think it's all actually going to come clear, a bigger picture for all of us as a country eventually. Yeah.
No, we'll see it. You know, it kind of reminds me, like, 9/11, being here in New York, and, like, you lost your innocence that day, kind of what you went through with kind of realizing, like, I was always like that too. Like, America's going to survive. America's going to do what, like, and when you lose that, and I think a lot of us have gone through that in the past 6 months, just with everything going on socially, politically. I mean, it's a really scary time, but it's also, you know, a time of ingenuity and coming out with new things. And I want to talk to you. First off, I want to go back and say, how did the whole Kevin Durant, you were at Roc Nation, how did you first meet him? And, like, how did that relationship start?
We went wild on the tangents, right? We got to get back.
I forgot we're doing an entrepreneur.
We got a course correct. I was managing an artist by the name of Wale from DC. And I had a great group of talented artists and producers I work with in music. And they've all gone on to have tremendous success post me, which says either I was working with the right artist or I was the wrong manager at the time, right? One of them. But I was working with Solange and Wale and Meek Mill and people that are really successful. And Wale was like, I know you're the biggest hoop fan ever. KD grew up where I grew up. He's in town. He just won Rookie of the Year and he wants to go to the Jay-Z show. You're going, right? I was like, yeah. He's like, will you bring him? I'm like, hell yeah, I'll bring him. And I went to the show with him, with his brother, I think. And we just connected and we stayed in touch for a while, but always basketball, which at the time, just, I geeked out about it. Even though I was 10 years older than him, I thought it was incredible. I didn't have that kind of dialogue with NBA players of that caliber.
Sure.
But now looking back on it, we all know KD loves to talk hoop. He'll talk hoop with just about anybody, right?
So right, we were, right.
we were just sharing info. And then when the agency started, reached out to Kevin, and it was timing. You know, I think between his like love for Jay-Z and the coolness of what was starting at Roc Nation and his comfort with me, and we had a lot of interviews and a lot of work to get him, but he was at a crossroads in his life and he came over there. And the next 4 years, you know, I was his agent and manager at Roc Nation, and my role in his life grew through the years there. And it was perfect because we had an incredible infrastructure and great mentors and leaders. And I had freedom to do what I wanted to do with Kevin. And I stopped working in other sports and I stopped working in other NBA players. And it started to be clear that like that entrepreneurial thing that was inside of me, to have my name in lights, my business, win or lose, was more appealing, was better. You know, I didn't need a long contract and a salary that I knew could only go to a certain point at some point. I'm not built like that. So I wasn't going to do it if Kevin didn't really, really want to, because I was in the right situation. I didn't think there was a chance, but Kevin wanted to.
Yeah.
It was tough, but the ability to go start something at that point, I was 38, 39, and we had a blank canvas. So we had our experiences and our relationships, and Kevin was one of the greatest athletes in the world. And I had some great relationships and connections and experience, but you know, I was really behind the scenes, and I wouldn't say I didn't underachieve to that point, but I hadn't, you know, it's not what you read always. It's not a clear extension up. I was building the bricks of my building. Then when it clicked and it made sense.
More from our guest, but first a word from our sponsors.
Coming up with a name for your business can be difficult. Finding a matching domain can be even harder. Don't settle for a website name, you know, that's kind of close. Show strength and brand continuity with a domain name that is the exact match to your business name. .inc offers premium, instantly credible domains built for businesses of all sizes. Startups everywhere are switching to the domain ending that means business, from reset.inc to self.inc. A .inc domain will help put your brand alongside Fortune 500 companies like Facebook, PayPal, and Amazon. .inc is the domain that means business for your business. Establish your online presence by registering your .inc domain today. Visit entrepreneur.inc to learn more.
And our next sponsor.
Hey, it's Robert. It's been a really tough year all around, but like myself, The Hartford believes in the power of the human spirit to overcome adversity. And with the right team, resources, and technology to support them through the difficult times, people are definitely capable of amazing things. And now, more than ever, employee needs are evolving quickly. It's more important than ever to have a partner who stands behind you as you look to make decisions that ensure you are providing the right support for your workforce. The Hartford is dedicated to helping you do that. Their experienced, consultative teams will take the time to get to fully understand your company and help to design a benefits package that provides the best experiences possible for your employees. To learn more about how The Hartford can have your back as you navigate what's next, visit thehartford.com/future of benefits. That's thehartford.com/future of benefits.
The Hartford is the Hartford Financial Services Group, Inc., and its subsidiaries, including underwriting companies, Hartford Life, an accident insurance company, and Hartford Fire Insurance Company. Home office is Hartford, Connecticut.
And we're back. And it sounds like it was perfect timing just for your own growth and where Kevin was. And at that point, when you were together and working with him, and I totally relate to like the ceiling. And I think everyone who listens to this show wants to be an entrepreneur, is an entrepreneur. They want to see their name in light. They want to call the shots. And it's so hard because anywhere you go, agencies, big companies, it's so political and it's so difficult. But how did it come about? Was it a point where you were just like, you went to Kevin, he came to you, you guys just thought about it together?
No, it was much more fluid because there's some things that fall in line with an agency relationship, you know, and when we would talk about sponsorships or sneaker deals and looming free agency a year or two out, that was within the infrastructure of what we had there. And my style of management, and it was very much the Roc Nation style, which I picked up on, is that you got to be in it. You got to be on the ground. You can't be an office manager. You can't be like, you know, working 9 to 5 while they're in the gym, and then a photo shoot and then a charity appearance and then back to the game. So I hit the road, you know, and I was in it with him, and we would speak and hang out after. We talk about things he wanted to do and things I wanted to do and get to know each other. And we're in a society where the enterprise, these people in the NBA and NFL and in all the major league sports, all sports, entertainment, that have worked so hard to get the success to some degree, not some degree, get some success in their field. All of a sudden, it used to kind of be like, okay, sponsorship deal, tour. And then the conversation changed in the last 20 years, and owning your own business and having your own friends and family work for you and building a generational wealth and an infrastructure. And obviously LeBron brought that to the forefront, became very common conversation. So at that point, it was like, all right, well, I want to have my own thing. We just didn't know what it was. I think what we did have the courage to do was do it without an anchor. We didn't have a project.
Right.
We were like, we want to build something and take our time.
So that's a great lead, and because so much has changed just with the dollars involved nowadays in sports, and a lot of these athletes have realized that that's great making salaries, but if I can invest in a company, if I could build, that's really, they have huge opportunities. So when you guys started out and said, we're going to go for this, what did you think with the first project? When was that first move of like, we're doing this, and you hung up the shingle?
Well, when we first, Kevin's last year in Oklahoma City, we invested in Postmates and the process of investing in it.
That's a great, nice job there.
Thank you. It was like a little bit of a teaser into end up in Silicon Valley next year, you know, and it wasn't planned in any way. Postmates was as organic as it gets, because like, I'm not very technologically advanced, or at the time, especially.
Yeah.
And I was like, downloaded this app to order food that someone told me about. And then I told Kevin about it in Oklahoma. And then we're like, we should invest in Postmates, called them. The guy was a Hoops fan, Bastion, and we invested. Then we get to the Bay, and we go to Ben Horowitz's house one night, and Steve Stout set up a dinner to introduce Kevin to the Bay, and it was his birthday.
Yeah.
And that's where I'm at my best, you know? So I go there, and all these big VCs are there, and all these big founders, and the whole Warriors team was there, and I met a bunch of people, and Ron Conway was incredible to me. And the next week, I went to dinner with him and an associate of his, Brian Picorni, and Kevin. And I asked questions like my 11-year-old would ask about VC, and wasn't scared to ask it. Like questions like, what's a Series A? Wait, so I don't get it. And guess what? I never asked it again. And I know it. So, and I know
that. You know how many people are so scared to ask that? I think of myself, like, you know, and then I love that you did that.
Always. And now I'm conscious of it. I'm conscious of when I ask a question, and if I'm on a conference call and I'm like, I know everybody on this call is wondering what he just spoke about. Like, what did he, I don't even know what word that was.
Right.
So I always ask. And it's just like, it's like the offensive line. Like I always say, this is my analogy I love to use lately. The offensive line just like opened up when I started asking these questions. And I was like, man, I could do this. And we started getting involved and asking more and connecting with people. And I think people really acknowledged how we went about the process. And we started meeting more people. And we had a good instinct for the founders we met. We had a great filter from a handful of VCs. We started to get a reputation as a good investor, regardless of the check size. So 50,000, whatever it was, we're working.
You were in.
And we did a great job in press telling the story of the companies we worked with. And it then got more flow and more flow. And then being out there, we started to look at what we could do at YouTube a bit. And we went to YouTube and really saw how the creators were making business of their YouTube page. So we tried it with Kevin and built Kevin's page up. And while that wasn't for him, it spearheaded this like, okay, we do want to tell stories and create content and build a media component to what we're doing without being having to say we're a studio or we're a media company or raising money. And we started working on some docs and did a movie with Nike on Kevin. And we did a few docs on, one on Fox, one on Showtime, one on Netflix, and sold the scripted series to Apple. And all that started happening out in the Bay. And we were also kind of building our network within the VC world. And then we were building out our philanthropic arm bigger than ever before. And I was meeting incredible minds and doing incredible things within the organization. And there was brands that were investing into the YouTube channel, into the ecosystem. And then all of a sudden, I realized that as I started to explain what I do to people, and as I started to see the reporting on sports business, I said, how would a fan even understand what this is. And there really should be a voice for that, not Sports Business Journal, which is an industry voice.
Exactly.
And that was the vision for the boardroom. And honestly, like it's been 2 years, a little over 2 years, and it's really being built, knock on wood, in the exact way that I wanted. And it's starting to add vertical after vertical and to build the brand out and find our voice. And as that then came into play, then it was brands that were maybe aligning with us on Kevin that then wanted to be into the boardroom. And then we then empowered them to work on some of the programming at the Durant Center in our organization. And all of a sudden this ecosystem started to build, and some of the investments we made had follow-on rounds. And then we took a more active approach in consulting, and then that generated money. So it was really just about saying, if we do quality work and do things that we love and that we believe in, and we just focus on putting them into the world and quality, and I keep doing what I do, and Kevin best at what he does, and obviously kept giving me the best gift in becoming Kevin Durant year after year, and we trust each other implicitly, and we hired great people, and you know, and we have so far ahead of us, but we started to finally build something that felt authentically ours.
Yeah. And it sounds like for you personally, like, you strike me as your greatest attributes are the way you talk to people, connect with people. And it seems like with 35 Ventures and this partnership, like, this seems like you're at your best.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I think so. And I don't know if that means that it'll be as big as Kevin wants it to be or as big as I want it to be. Maybe other people won't find it, won't find some of the work that we do as great as we do. But our goal, like, it's interesting. Kevin's an interesting person in that way. Like, he's such a practical thinker and has an incredible, like, you know, it's like when athletes move in slow motion, they always say that, like, they can see the court and the
game slows down for them.
That's how I think Kevin lives his life to some degree. So it's like, Kevin, yo, we could do X, Y, and Z. And he's like, well, why would we do that? You know? And it's like, oh, shit, I didn't even think about that one. And it's like, all he said was, why would we do it? You know?
Yeah.
So when I talked to him at the future of our company and we start to think about long-term, we both didn't know if we could say it out loud, but we were like, why does there have to be an exit? Like, can't my kids work here if they want? You know, can't we just do this forever? Like, I enjoy what I do. Now, the boardroom may be sold or could go under.
Sure.
We could get a big studio deal for the next 5 docs or no one will hire us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
We'll keep building because that's what we do. And we'll keep working and it could pivot and we could be running and operating an NBA team under 35 Ventures in 10 years, you know?
Probably likely to happen. How did the boardroom come about? Because, you look at that and that just kind of blew up. But I know you said you thought of the idea in Sports Business Journal, which is so true. It's just an industry trade. But how did you go from, hey, this is a great idea, to actually making it happen?
Was able to get Connor Schell at ESPN to believe in the concept. And originally, I wanted to partner with them from the beginning on everything.
I'll tell you first, though, I play ball with him at Equinox. Connor, he's actually got a good 3-point shot, believe it or not.
Deceiving athlete. I played doubles with him the other day. I wiped him off, him and his partner. He's a very deceiving athlete. I got him to believe it, but I wanted ESPN to see it way more.
Yeah.
Holistically, you know, like to look at the whole thing and build something, but they couldn't do that. They're not built that way, at least then.
Yeah.
So we got shows on ESPN Plus and they were behind a paid wall and we didn't get major marketing and people didn't really see it, but it played a big part in helping me build the other verticals of the brand. The ratings were probably, I have no idea. They don't even tell you what the ratings are, but I think our brand IP grew from it. And then I launched our website and our social properties and our newsletter and we started hiring content creators and we started doing our own long form content. We did a conference at Sloan and doing more and more monthly. And we did this college series and we have the podcast network. And the idea was that all of this could have been done with ESPN. In theory, it's better that we own it all ourselves and that we controlled everything.
Totally.
And ESPN and the programming they did for us was incredible. But they're not going to spend the money that we had in the contract to buy another 6 or 8 of these behind a paid wall. And the best way for us to build is for them to collaborate with us throughout the year and, you know, and let that be a part of building our business. We can do that with anyone now. So, you know, it 2 years. And the thing is, I think our brand is bigger than our audience and it's a challenge, you know, building audience, especially digital in today's world is very hard, but we have a nice core audience, great brand recognition. I think athletes and business minds have gravitated to us to a degree and we've gotten that access.
Yeah.
So I think I feel really good about where we're going with it, but very similar to how I'm operating my life now. I'm not trying to raise big institutional money to blow this into a media platform. I'm building this in our style,
yeah,
growing every month, adding new elements to it every month. And and we'll see, you know, how it keeps evolving.
No, I love that. I love how kind of going back to your original thoughts with what makes you happy and doing it this way. And sometimes people are just like, I want to raise millions and thinking, you know, you'll be really happy, or selling their business and thinking you're going to be really happy. And then you realize like the happiness was in the building and the journey and what you were doing. So, you know, it seems like you have some of that insight.
Yeah, because we can keep it. It's like we have capital, but we don't have to raise it. You know, my partner's Kevin Durant. I think, you know, people understand that. And we have other forms of revenue for the business and things that we've chosen to focus on, these multiple different parts of our business, because we think they ultimately help the boardroom, as opposed to having to raise money and then maybe having to take our eyes off that other work because we have partners and investors. Now, I am looking for alignment now more because we've proved model, but we don't have, you know, we're not overtime raising like our Series B with a billion in views in a month. But
right.
I think we have a trajectory.
And where do you see the business in terms of, like you said, I mean, 35 ventures, you could own a team, and you said 10 years, might be 5 years, but where do you see, just if you were to say this is a business, because you do many different things. You have media, you have investments, and maybe you don't have to define it, but like, what would you consider your business, like if you had to categorize it?
I mean, I guess at the end of the day, we're a media and entertainment company. The fact that we invest so much, it's not really much different than I would think from Tom Brady or LeBron. We talk about our investments more because we do it at these early stages where these companies rely on us. We've decided to invest there than in private equity. We started to do more later stage, and we just did the MLS team. I think for us, at the end of the day, we live in a like sports and entertainment more so than media. We're a sports and entertainment company, and it's in the form of a network. It's in form of brand relationship and consulting, in form of doc and movies, but it lives in sports and entertainment.
So you're a New York guy, right? You grew up in New York City.
Yep.
Knicks fan?
Yeah.
Die hard?
Heavy.
Who was your favorite player?
Well, different periods, because...
First favorite player.
Mark Jackson.
Okay. MJ.
Like, well, you'll know it, but I don't know how many of your listeners know this stuff, but like the Bernard King, Louis Orr, that whole Truck Robinson, Marvin Webster, like I liked that, but I was 7 and 8.
Right. I'm a little older than you. So the Bernard was my guy.
Yeah. I watched the game. I had a sleepover with a friend when Bernard King tore his ACL. The way they reacted then too, like an ACL is horrible, but it was done. Mark Jackson then in 87 was drafted. And then when they traded him, and I'm actually interviewing Doc Rivers for my podcast tonight.
He's great, Doc. I mean, just from knowing him from, that's awesome.
He was traded for Mark Jackson in 1991, and I was really pissed off.
Yeah, me too.
So like, I kind of just like revolted against the Knicks for a few years and rooted for like Mark Jackson's Pacer teams. But Starks, Oakley, Ewing. I really love Patrick Ewing. Like, I love him. And I love him in the same way that, like, I feel about Eli Manning, which is, like, just stop knocking our guy. Like, he was the best.
I'm a diehard Jets fan, but my dad was a Giants. Like, my best friends are all Giants fan. And they knock Eli. And I'm like, if this dude ever gave me 2 Super Bowls, I would put him on a statue in my house, right? Yeah. Like, but it's crazy.
But those, they're cynical ones, and those are the same that hate on Ewing. And then there's like the ones where like, don't say anything about Patrick Ewing or Eli Manning.
Yeah.
It's like Mark Messier.
Oh, you know, that you can't. I got his hockey stick right up here.
Were you pissed when Kevin didn't go to the Knicks?
Yes, that's why I wanted to ask you. So was there even any chance he wanted to go to the Knicks? Was there something he wanted to come to New York for business? I mean, everything I read about, obviously you were always attached to it.
Yeah, but I think like, so in NBA circles, meaning like an NBA answer to that question would be no, because I don't think he ever legitimately envisioned himself playing there. But in the real world, like, do you think about all these things? Like, yeah, like we talk, it's a very long and like continuous conversation.
Yeah.
I also think that he knew how I felt about the Knicks. You know what I'm saying? And I know how emotionally stressful that process can be for 2 people, LeBron James and Kevin Durant.
Yeah.
Where it's the next level of stress because of just the amount of coverage and debate that follows. You can say it's not real or it's not human, but like, or that like people don't care or that you don't pay attention to it, but it's a part of it. And then B, you are changing where you're living, changing where you're playing, changing who you're going to go to work with every day. So the decision is stressful. The first time we did it, we all loved the process. We were in the Hamptons with hosting legends of mine growing up. And
it's amazing, right?
Yeah. The second time was a business decision for Kevin, and he wanted to play in the best NBA basketball challenge. And it happened to be in Brooklyn, and it happened to be in the same city as the Knicks, who had two free agents available, you know? And I think that because of that, it became very much about him choosing the Nets over the Knicks. Whereas if he had went to Phoenix, because they had the exact same situation as Brooklyn, and him and Kai could have went there, then it might have been that, you know?
Right.
And I don't think, and that's what the same thing that happened with the Warriors, which is so hard for people to understand. And I understood that there was another side to the argument in terms of how people would perceive it. In Kevin's mind, it was, okay, what's the best challenge for me, best quality life for me, and best basketball for me right now? The Warriors. And I'm like, well, okay, you know, Kevin, they're going to kill you. But, you know, when you're the best at what you do, you don't necessarily see it that way, because you're like, well, No, but I'm still the best person on the court. So what does that matter? I'll go there and I'll take this to a whole nother level. You know, it's like, you wouldn't in New York City, if there was a kid that was like busting everybody's ass in one gym,
yeah,
and everybody in the good gym, the two great teams are playing, they'd be like, well, go over there where the good run is.
Yeah.
You know, and Kevin wanted to play basketball. He's a savant. He loves the game. Play basketball with those two teams.
Yeah, it's like when you know you're the best guy on the court, you got to go find a new court.
Yeah, and you want to play where you want to play. What does it matter?
Right. So how, in terms of Kevin, I mean, look, you're a New York guy. In terms of having him here now, and well, I guess, you know, when everything's back, how is that going to affect your business together with him? Is that going to be a lot easier? Are there advantages to that?
Yeah, the advantages are proximity. It's just, there's nothing that I can do pre-COVID on Zoom or FaceTime or virtually to reenact like the time you got to have the bond with your business partner, yeah, to be able to talk about things and really dive into them without like, we have an hour, or I'll call you right back, or they put you on pause on the FaceTime because they're texting. You know, this kind of stuff when you're building something is like conversation. It's time. And maybe 2-3 days we're hanging out, we're not talking about work. And then it starts to kind of happen, or just him seeing what's going on close hand, and people in our company knowing that he's coming in later in the week. All that's important. And then like any market, it's just New York is New York. You go play somewhere new. I knew a ton of people in New York City. Kevin Durant knew a ton of people in New York City, but there's a ton that we didn't know. So those kind of people came to the forefront. But again, that would have happened in other cities. It just happens to be that it's New York.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, with New York and just the opportunities here, I think it's just unlimited, especially for someone with his talent and you guys together from the business standpoint. So looking ahead to the future with the business short term, not thinking 10 years out with Kevin, what's on the table, let's say next 6 months? And then also, has it been difficult in this time to be doing business together and working with them?
No, it's been a really great time. Not in the world. And That's hard because the dichotomy and the kind of like, you know, you're in your mind, you're like, your work is growing, and fortunate to be in this bubble of some sorts where I've been able to be during quarantine. And Kevin and I speak a lot, and our work works in this climate. So what we've been building with the boardroom and some of our other content pieces, that works. And some of the brands that are listening, looking to do certain messaging, the messaging may change, but the platform we have is there. And then philanthropically, we just got super duper active in just trying to help the world, you know, helping at the issues that are most at the forefront of our existence. So social injustice, and the idea that like, we have been working in these workplaces for years, but now you got to step up more. And obviously in COVID relief, and then continuing to do the work we do back in PG County, where Kevin's from. So I think our conversations, if anything, I think we've really gotten closer as business partners. Our business, like, you have to make sure you check in. You got to check in with your partner. You can't just rely on the fact that 2 months earlier we were on the same page, you know?
Yeah,
so constantly being like, you want me to do this? Like, you know, there's times where I've asked them, especially with me being more public.
Yeah.
Because it's not necessarily how I knew I had it in me, but I didn't necessarily think I was going to ever do it because it didn't feel like the right thing for a manager to do. And it wasn't how, like, coming up in the music business, people would always like talk about, like, you don't want to be the guy that has to be whatever. But I think what I'm doing is very authentic to me. You know, it's not like I'm doing something that's out of the ordinary, or I'm trying to be someone I'm not. And because of that, he's always been my biggest fan in that way and has encouraged me to do it. And I've always checked back in. You sure? Like, you sure you want Kevin Durant's manager doing that? Like, right. That's how they say it. He's always been like, nah, do you, man? You're the best voice for this. You're the best voice for this. And same time, there's things he says like, nah, we shouldn't do that. Or I'll forward an email and say, we should pass on this. He'll be like, nah, I like it. And that banter has to keep happening. You know, you can't take time and pause on it.
I love it, man. It sounds like you guys, I mean, really coming into your own. You've done so well as it is. And, you know, obviously this being a podcast, I want to ask you, because it sounds like you're now getting out there, going to be doing some interviews. You got Doc today. How did that come about with the Cadence team and Cadence 13? And how did you go about that?
Well, I did it during the boardroom and felt comfortable. And the response was, at least they didn't tell me to not do it. And the more I did it, I felt like I was, in this case, when it came to the boardroom, communicating the vision for the business. You know, like I could hear what I was saying was what I want the business to portray. But I didn't overdose on it. You know, like I didn't jump on season two. The interviews I did were very on brand for me. So I was interviewing, whether it's Doc tonight or Matt King, the CEO of FanDuel, or Ice Cube, like about the big three. And there were interviews that Jay Will or Roz were doing that were right for them as we try to build out these faces of the company. The podcast network was, I think we wanted to have the boardroom on a podcast form. In trying to explore what we wanted, it made sense to not try to create the boardroom podcast be the same thing we did.
Right.
And started looking for partners that were going to allow us to kind of just like flex our creative muscles and do things our way and want to build something with us. And again, allows us to keep owning the boardroom, but have a great partnership with them. And Kevin then expressed interest in doing a show that was different. Like, didn't mind being under the boardroom network, but he was like, I'm going to do a show too. And I have this guy. And I was like, amazing. Now we have two shows. And then I was like, well, then I'll do a show. But then I started thinking to myself, well, Jay Will's on the radio every morning and he's on TV. He's got videos he does for us. Maybe the pod won't be right for him. And it just kept like everyone was falling the wayside. I was like, well, I guess I got to do the pod.
Love it.
And I try to be very self-aware. If I had heard on the phone, Chris Corcoran or any of these Cadence people,
because
I'm so perceptive, being like, your pod is, it was cool. Like, I felt genuine excitement, you know, and I've just been kind of following that and following that to make sure that, like, it's real. And I'm still bugged out. I finished the one 2 days ago with Jack Dorsey, and I was almost ready to, like, be like, well, the podcast thing was fun. And then I realized I got to do another 44.
I
figure I'll catch a groove or I'll call you and get advice, man.
You know, it's so fun. I just dive in. It's such a great, like, this podcasting thing. And when I left CAA last May, I just jumped into it with Entrepreneur. And it's just been such a learning experience, especially for what you do. I mean, it's like Jack Dorsey, you're getting like an hour. I'm getting an hour with you. Today, I take Arthur Blank.
It's incredible.
I was like, how am I getting an hour with Arthur Blank, right? Like, just I looked at it. It was just an incredible learning experience and like just such an opportunity. I love the format too. And knowing you as a connector and communicator, like, it's perfect for you. I mean, like, it's a great way.
That. Yeah. I'll try. I mean, I'm definitely like, how am I going to deal with if no one listens?
Don't worry. I'm learning how to do that.
I just blinders, right? You just keep the blinders on.
Yeah, I don't. Well, you're more.
I'll tell Chris Corcoran. I'll say, listen, just add a zero to every number.
Hey, exactly. They're probably good at that, all these guys. but now, all right, with the time we have, I want to ask. We had CJ McCollum on the podcast. Really bright guy. I mean, he started a wine brand, I mean, he was telling me he was researching it for a couple of years, and it's funny how things work out. He was in Portland, so it's a big wine place. So now, you know. So anyway, obviously my Knicks aren't in this thing. I'm rooting for the Trailblazers. I got to ask, you're a basketball junkie, man. Who do you like?
Are you rooting for the Trailblazers because for Melo?
I love, listen, Melo as just being a New Yorker and him coming. But I love McCollum so much just in that interaction. I was like, I got to root for this guy, right?
Yeah.
I know you got the Nets, but like, even if we took them out of the equation, like, who you rooting for?
It's tough for me. It's going to be series by series, to be honest with you, because there's a lot of subplots, and I'll just say that end up happening with every season. And then people talk about like players' rankings in history and who this person, that person is. And while Kevin could care less, I get caught up in
this. I love it.
So there's times where I'm like, man, if he wins, you know they're going to say this, or if he wins. Yep. And so I play a little bit of that. There's a part of me that would love to see James and Russ win.
Yeah.
I really just love them. LeBron is like the whole world's guilty pleasure. It would be amazing to see him in the finals again because he's LeBron. And I think the Clippers have the best team pound for pound. And I think that their playoff built like Beverly, Montrezl Harrell, Lou Will. I think that Denver is not going to win, but they're scary. And I don't think any of these series are going to be sweeps. I just think the environment and the level of play and, like, you know, the defense has been lacking a bit, but I think you see sharp offensive play. And I think that you're going to have some really competitive games. I think in the East, Toronto is like just so well coached and so much better than anyone could have imagined. And it's real.
Yeah.
I actually think the Nets are going to give them a little bit of a problem.
They've looked
good,
man.
And I'm not saying they're winning the series, but because they're both teams right now that don't have stars and their systems and well coached, I think the Nets will play them hard. And Boston, obviously, I think could have a problem. I know I've named every team. So this is what I'll say at the end. I think ultimately it'll be Milwaukee and one of the LA teams.
Yeah,
I just do.
Yeah.
But I think you're going to see incredible series the whole way through. And if Russ is healthy, I think Houston's going to be incredible to watch.
Yeah. It's just, you know, it's just so great knowing like what we were dealing with 3 months ago, 4 months ago, that you can turn on the TV. I mean, we didn't even talk baseball, but at least you have basketball, hockey, football. I mean, I guess every sport might be playing at one
MLS.
Time. MLS, which is great, which Arthur was telling me, like, that Atlanta United is like one of his, just loved it, like the energy in those stadiums. Like, I'm sure what you guys invest
in. Atlanta's got, like, they pack it in. It's incredible, right? Because it's such a weird thing as well, because they don't do the same for the Braves. You know?
No, and it's weird because he was saying when he wanted to bring the team, he was asking Garber for years, and they were just like, Atlanta's not a soccer market. And I know, like, in the last 2 years when they were in the championship, like, they had 70,000 people just standing the entire game. Like, how great is that? But I love the fact that, like, sports is going on, man. It's bringing back community. And I want to say thank you. Thank you so much for coming on, man. Continued success. You guys, you're crushing it, man. Seems like you're in your own, and I can't wait, you know, to see you guys owning the team. Hopefully the Knicks, and then we can make some real changes.
That would be a dream, man. But I feel good about what they got in place right now.
Do you?
Yeah,
are you happy? Good. Yeah. Do you know Leon a lot?
Very well. He's the absolute best.
He's the best, man. I would play with him too. He's actually, believe it or not, he's got a decent outside shot.
Move.
He, at every year at CAA retreat, we'd play, you play 3 days, 4 days, and Leon runs the games, right? And he has all his guys, and he's a good field general, and he's got a good outside shot. And I mean, that was the only thing I look forward to every year is, like, we get to play for 3-4 days. But you're surprised, you know, like, some of these guys weren't bad.
Yeah, that's what we look like. People are like, I can't believe Rich.
They know I'm not that great. But anyway, man, Rich, super appreciate it, bud. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you, man.
And I'm looking forward to keep hearing about you and Kevin's continued success with 35 Ventures.
Appreciate it. Thanks, man. The show is great. Thanks so much.
And that's our episode. If you like what you heard, please subscribe to How Success Happens wherever you get your podcasts. We come out with a new episode every Wednesday morning, and you don't want to miss it. And if you like to share, please feel free to pass along the show to an entrepreneur friend who could use a boost, and I could always use the subscribers. And do you have ideas for guests? I always love to hear about great entrepreneurs. If you know anyone, shoot me an email at hsh@entrepreneur.com or on Twitter at Robert Tuchman, that's RobertTuchman, or even send me a message on LinkedIn. How Success Happens is a production of Entrepreneur Media. Be sure to visit entrepreneur.com for insight on building your business, or even better yet, subscribe to our magazine. No joke, I found my first job after reading about a company in Entrepreneur Magazine back in the 1990s. It's always been my absolute favorite magazine for entrepreneurs. Thanks for listening and spending some time with me today. Until next time, my name is Robert Tuchman, just a fellow entrepreneur and your host. See you soon.